Welcome to the Bible Answer Man broadcast with Christian Research Institute President Hank Hanegraaff. Our mission at CRI is not only to equip you with Christian doctrine, apologetic accuracy, and discernment, but to help you become a faithful apprentice of Jesus Christ because life and truth matter. If you'd like to know more about CRI and the Bible Answer Man broadcast, call 888-7000-CRI, 888-7000-CRI, or go to our website at equip.org. That's equip.org. The following program was pre-recorded. And now, here's Hank Hanegraaff.
Thank you very much, Randy. A couple of comments and then right to our questions. I want to mention the ABCs of redefining marriage, and the reason I'm doing that at the beginning of this show is because at present, two communities are heading towards each other with blinding speed. One that finds its life in God and biblical truth, and the other comprised of the LGBTQ activists who are pushing for a radical redefinition of marriage and gender, a church remade in the image of the culture and greatly expanded government, filling the once vibrant church, which has left a very obvious void. Let me just say three things quickly. First of all, in this regard, there's an anthropological reality. And what I mean by that is, according to a consensus of sociological metrics, women and men enjoy strategic complementarity. And as such, both are essential in the rearing of civilization. We're talking about basic building blocks of civilization here. Then there's a biological reality. The biological reality is that sexual reproduction, well, it requires a male and a female. It does not take a budding theologue to recognize that every organ in the human body is self-sufficient to perform its intended function except for one. And of course, marriage protects and reinforces this powerful complementarity. There's also a civil reality, and for the health of a civil society, both mother and father are necessary. And what we're doing now is enshrining a false definition of marriage in our laws, and that is very much like flooding the economy with counterfeit money. Everything is ultimately devalued. Well, where are we as a body of Christ? We are there to be salt and light. We can't change anybody's heart, but we can be equipped, always ready to give an answer, a reason for the hope that lies within us, with gentleness and with respect. If you can join me to that end, it would be deeply appreciated, used for God's glory and for the extension of His kingdom. I'm talking about supporting this ministry prayerfully and financially. You can do that at equip.org or by writing me at Box 8500, Charlotte, North Carolina, zip code 28271, or talking to one of our resource consultants at 888-7000. And the letters CRI. Let's go right to our phone callers. Talk to Paul. He's listening in Denver, Colorado. Hi, Paul.
Yeah, Hank, I was wondering, I came across this when I was reading an article written by Walter Martin years ago on the Catholic Church, and it's called Unum Sanctum. Are you familiar with it?
I am. It actually is Latin for the one holy church.
Okay, well, what I was really kind of concerned about was the very last statement in there says, we declare, we proclaim, we define that it is absolutely necessary for salvation that every human creature be subject to the Roman pontiff. And it sounds to me like the Catholic Church is teaching that if you're not in the Catholic Church, there's no way to be saved.
Well, this is what's interesting about Roman Catholicism. The bull that you're talking about is a bull on papal supremacy, and it was issued back in 1302 by Pope Boniface VIII. And it sets forth propositions that are not held to by the Roman Catholic Church today. But this is one of the problems I see with Roman Catholicism. The Pope can speak ex cathedra from the chair of Peter, and it can affect new dogma, like the 19th century dogma about the Immaculate Conception of Mary. This is a dogma that sets forth very dogmatic propositions not only on the unity of the church, the necessity of belonging to the church for salvation, but as you've pointed out, the supremacy of the Pope as head of the church and the necessity of submission to this Pope in order to belong to the church and attain eternal salvation. You will find that many Catholics today will point out that there are separated brethren, and they don't doubt the salvation of those separated brethren. But yeah, I mean, this is one of the problems in terms of the great schism in church history, which happened in and around 1054. It was ultimately about the pontiff exercising supremacy over the other patriarchs in places like Antioch and Alexandria and Jerusalem, Constantinople. And that led to a split in the church, and that split has been a gaping wound in Christianity. It is the antithesis of our Lord's high priestly prayer that we might all be as one. So as I've said many times about the Roman Catholic Church, it's a true church, but it has significant error. And one of the significant errors I just enumerated in response to your question, the fact that the Pope can speak ex cathedra and establish new dogma.
Yeah, well, but I thought the Catholic Church teaches that when the Pope speaks on religious matters, that he's infallible. How can they reverse on this?
Well, I mean, there's cognitive dissonance that people live under as individuals, but whole institutions do as well. It doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me, but I see this within many Protestant denominations as well. They say on the one hand that there is sufficiency in the atonement of Jesus Christ, and yet look forward to sacrificing animals in the millennial period with a rebuilt temple and reinstituted temple sacrifices that are efficacious for atoning for sin. Well, obviously, if there are sacrifices that atone for sin in the millennium, then Christ's sacrifice on the cross did not atone for all sin. If you talk to the average Protestant about this, they're not going to be aware that they're living in a state of tension there and would deny any thought whatsoever that they are in some way militating against the sufficiency of Christ's atonement on the cross. So again, I think we have to have a certain amount of patience with our own humanity. I think a lot of people think with their paradigms, as I've said many times on the broadcast, as opposed to thinking about their paradigms. So they end up living in a psycho-epistemological cocoon, a linguistic hall of mirrors, which is one of the big problems that the Eastern Church saw very early on. The Western Church has tried to take many, many things that are mysteries and try to use Aristotelian logic to come to an understanding of that which is beyond our ken. Get in one call before we go to break. Let's try Joy in Cleveland, Ohio. Hi.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call, Hank. I'm a longtime listener, first-time caller. And the issue that I wanted to share with you is, it really weighs heavy on my heart, is an issue about my son. Mm-hmm. We have four adult children, and my second oldest is a boy who's now 27. And 6 years ago, he admitted to my husband and I that he was gay. He also told us he was now atheist. I was raised Baptist. My husband was raised Catholic. We raised our children in a Methodist church. He went to Sunday school, Bible school. I prayed with him. He went to church camps, and he was baptized at the age of 11. And so this was really shocking to us. We had no inkling. He had a steady girlfriend through most of high school, so I was very shocked and didn't suspect it at all. And I guess the things that I'm still trying to deal with right now, we do have a good relationship with him. I have, you know, prayed with him. I've prayed for him. I've given him the Case for Christ authors, who has a Bible that is very factual in science, gave him a copy of that Bible, and he has read it. I see where he's highlighted in it. But he's very, very intelligent. He now has a highly educated and intelligent partner as well. But I guess when I'm reading my Bible, you know, I've always believed the Proverbs 22:6, where it says, train a child in the way he should go, and when he's old, he will not depart from it.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things that we do, Joy, is we get rid of God, because if there's a God, we're accountable. So as I have found out in my own life, oftentimes the problem is not intellectual, it's moral. We don't want to live within the parameters that God sets forth for us to live within, and so we attempt to rationalize him out of existence. And by the way, I did that up until age 29. So I want you to have hope and a recognition that if you demonstrate love and you demonstrate the ability to give an answer to the questions that are raised when you have an opportunity to answer those questions, God may as yet see to it that there's a transformation in your son's life.
That does give me hope. Thank you.
You are welcome, and thank you so much for calling. There's a book that I think is fantastic in this regard. Often when questions don't offer themselves up easily to simplistic sound bites, so there are books that really drive home the importance of a biblical worldview, and there's none more significant than the book written by Joe Dallas. It's titled, When Homosexuality Hits Home, What to Do When a Loved One Says They're Gay. You can get the book at equip.org or just hang on. We are coming to Station Break. We'll be back on the other side of the break with more answers to your questions. So please don't touch that dial.
Because an increasingly militant, intolerant, and hostile secularism would love to silence the voice of the Bible Answer Man broadcast, we ask you to do all you can this month to help us turn up the volume. We are deeply grateful for your partnership at this critical time as we strive to stand courageously for life and truth. Stand with Hank Hanegraaff and the Christian Research Institute during the key month of June to ensure that we end our financial year in a position of strength. To make a gift to support the Christian Research Institute's life-changing outreaches, simply call 888-7000-CRI. That's 888-7000-CRI. Or visit us at equip.org. God bless you. We'll be back in just a moment with more from Hank Hanegraaff. So rapid and pandemic has been the decline of biblical literacy and spiritual discernment that our once unimaginable post-truth culture is effectively becoming an anti-truth culture. While the sun is setting on the Western Church, Islam is now the fastest growing religion in the world. This means that it's not simply enough to be aware of this threat. Christians need to wake up, stand up, and speak up. This means being able to counter the outright lies about Islam that otherwise will go unchecked with horrendous consequences. And that's what Hank Hanegraaff's book, Muslim, What You Need to Know About the World's Fastest Growing Religion, will enable you to do. To receive your copy as our appreciation for your financial partnership, call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support CRI's many outreaches. 888-7000-CRI or visit equip.org. The Soviet Red Army won the Battle of Stalingrad. It appeared at first the Nazi war machine would secure the victory, but the Soviets battled back from near certain defeat with extraordinary courage and resoluteness to turn the tide of the battle and ultimately the war. The lesson is that both men and material, people and provisions played a critical role. Willingness to fight and munitions in the arsenal were pivotal. Our contemporary battle for truth against anti-Christian secularists raises the stakes above the significance of Stalingrad. CRI likewise needs military partners willing to stand for truth, along with the financial means to accomplish the mission. Stand with us during the key month of June to end the fiscal year in a position of strength. Call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support CRI's life-changing outreaches, or visit equip.org. The Christian Research Journal is CRI's award-winning magazine, combining eye-catching design with well-researched articles to equip believers in doctrine, defense, and discernment. The Christian Research Journal's primary commitment is to contend earnestly for the faith that was once for all delivered to the saints. In keeping with this commitment, the journal's mission is both evangelistic and pastoral, furthering the proclamation and defense of the historic gospel of Jesus Christ, and helping his followers distinguish between essential Christian doctrine and doctrine that is peripheral, aberrant, or heretical. In an age of subjectivism and moral relativism, may Christians ground their faith and values in the objective, reliable testimony of Holy Scripture. Start your subscription to the Christian Research Journal today. Call 888-7000-CRI or go online to equip.org. That's equip.org. Now back to the Bible Answer Man broadcast and your host, Hank Hanegraaff.
Thank you much, Randy. And let's go back to the phone lines. Talk to Anthony listening in Richmond, Virginia. Hi, Anthony.
Hello. My question is about a verse in Matthew chapter 6, verse 24. It's kind of a little bit of a long verse, but the end of it ends, you cannot serve God and Mammon. That's in the King James Version of the Bible. But there are other translations where it says you cannot serve God and money. And I was just kind of wondering, like, why is there a difference, and which is, like, the correct one?
Sure. And this is a beautiful verse when you think about it. No one can serve two masters, for either he will hate the one and love the other, or else he will be loyal to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and mammon. So here's the bottom line. This is like a slave attempting to serve two masters, people attempting to maintain an attachment to both that which is earthly and that which is heavenly. So we can be a slave to the things of this world, or we can be bondservants or bondslaves of Christ. It's impossible to serve both, because both demand full allegiance. And that's why Jesus calls mammon, or riches, or maybe an overarching term for the things of this world, a master, not because it is indeed evil by its nature. It's not ontologically evil, but because of the control it can have over people. I mean, think about how that works in daily life. The things of this world, riches and pleasures, the world, the flesh, and the devil can so easily get a grasp on our hearts. See, here you have an overarching umbrella term for earthly things as opposed to those which are heavenly.
Okay.
Got it?
Yep. Thank you.
Cool.
That helped. Thanks so much.
Hey, thanks, Anthony. I'm going to go from an Anthony to an Andrew in Kansas City, Missouri. Hi, Andrew.
Hi, Hank. How you doing?
I'm good, thank you. Nice talking to you.
Always a pleasure to talk with you. Talking about fasting, there are priests, as far as a focus through Lent, an excellent example he gave us was, you know, fasting was part of a three-legged stool. And he said the other things, the focus were almsgiving and also Bible study. And it's kind of keep a perspective as we go through Lent.
Yeah, that's right. That's beautiful. It's absolutely true. And, this is one of the things I try to communicate with respect to an aspect of fasting. And there are many. Maybe there are more legs than just the three. But the one leg that you mentioned that I think is so transcendently important is to recognize that as we're fasting, we come to a true valuation of things, and we realize that a lot of things we take for granted are things that others do not have. So it gives us an opportunity to take the money that we are saving, which we would oftentimes put into our own food and luxuries, and we start reserving that and giving it to the poor. So it's a great habit to get into, to fast and not only demonstrate that your belly is not your God, but you have a higher perspective than that, but take the resources that you are saving in the process and use that to assuage the needs of others.
Yeah, the line of sacrificial giving is really important.
Yeah, it is, and the Bible study is as well. I mean, that's why during the Lenten period there are so many Bible readings and so many church services and so many opportunities to focus on those things which are beyond the earthly, the mammon that I was just talking about, and focus on those things which are eternal.
Yeah, excellent. All right. Well, thank you very much.
Well, thanks for your contribution. I'm really glad that you called, and thank your presbyter as well.
Not a problem. Thank you very much, Hank.
God bless you. Back to the phone lines. We'll talk to Dan in Illinois. Hi, Dan.
Hey, Hank. A complicated question. I know this is a podcast, and I don't want to get into the theological manifestations of a very complex subject. Briefly, I was an atheist for many, many years and came to know Christ 6 years ago. I've been getting my master's degree at Biola University in California, and I did take a course with William Lane Craig on middle knowledge. As you know, there's a book, a fantastic book by Luis de Molina on divine knowledge, part four of the Concordia, which I read and so forth. And my question is this. I know that this is not essential Christian doctrine, and we can, debate about it vigorously, but we don't have to, argue about it and so forth. I understand that. I've read many of your books. I've been listening to you for the last 6 years. You're a great Christian, and I love you for it. I just wanted to know your take on this, because I think from a strict Calvinistic perspective, I can't subscribe to predestination and, people that are elected to go to hell and predestination and that sort. And on the other hand, I don't subscribe to the Thomas Aquinas theory of, absolute free will, where God does not have knowledge and is sort of like flying by the seat of his pants, and depending on when the person decides in terms of his free will. And so this whole idea of middle knowledge with Luis de Molina, where you sort of like take the absolute sovereignty of God and the free will, and you put this together with his middle knowledge, I thought was a very, very interesting theological idea. And I was wondering what your thoughts were on it.
Well, I do think it's a very interesting theological idea, and you correctly point out that this is the brainchild of Luis de Molina, who was a 16th century Jesuit priest who was also reacting to the strong predestinarianism of Luther and Calvin and other Protestant reformers. And so he saw this as an opportunity of reconciling God's sovereignty with human free will, preserving genuine human libertarian freedom against compatibilistic views of freedom. And you're also correct in saying that the prominent defender of this view is William Lane Craig. Now, look, I have no problem with this. I think it is a possible way of reconciling two things, but I've also over the years become wary of trying to reconcile things that in my mind are irreconcilable. I mean, there are antinomies, and I'm more comfortable today than I have ever been living in the land of antinomy, meaning tension. There are so many things that in the early years as an apologist and a new Christian, I tried to figure out. I still remember, and in fact, I have the evidence of a Bible here in my studio in which I was drawing pictures to try to come up with the perfect analogy for the Trinity. And eventually, after many illustrations and thinking this through, and I finally came to, I think, the wisest decision of all, and that is to leave this in the land of antinomy, recognizing that there is a great mystery here, and no illustration properly solves that mystery. It is beyond our ken. And so I leave this great mystery alone, recognizing that I can apprehend something that I can't comprehend. Of course, the incarnation falls into the same category. The real presence of Christ in the Eucharist, for me, falls in the same category. I don't try to use Western logic to unravel that which cannot be unraveled. I rather leave this, as the ancients said, as the mysterium tremendum et fascinans, the mystery that causes me to tremble and yet attracts me. So I more and more love the land of antinomy in these kinds of discussions. I mean, I appreciate people trying to unravel them, but I also recognize that just as I choose my path, God directs my steps, and I can't fully figure that out. I know that God is sovereign. I also know that if I don't wash my hands, they're not going to become clean on their own. So again, maybe not a satisfactory answer for you, but just an indication that I am more comfortable as I grow older living in the land of antinomy.
No, I think your answer is, I think, a fantastic one. You know, bear in mind, Hank, that you've got probably 35-plus years. You know, I'm 61 years old and came to know the Lord at age 55. Certainly, you know, loving the Lord with all my heart, soul, and mind, and with all of my strength. And one of those things, you know, I take very seriously is also the mind. And so I want to know, but, you know, I haven't been at this as long as you have, but certainly, again, it's not essential Christian doctrine, but I wanted to get your take because I do read a lot about your books. I listen to you all the time. I think you're a fantastic apologist. I think you do represent the Lord, and I view you as a Christian brother, and I thank you.
Well, thank you so much for those kind compliments, and you're staying under some fantastic people. Thanks again for tuning into this broadcast, for supporting this broadcast. I can't do what I do without you. For those that joined CRI's support team, a special thanks. This is a wonderful group of people that are being added to daily as we take this ministry around the world. So thanks for tuning in. Look forward to seeing you next time with more of the Bible Answer Man broadcast.
Thanks for joining us for the Bible Answer Man broadcast with Hank Hanegraaff. Our daily commitment here at CRI is to defend the faith once for all delivered to the saints and equip believers to become true disciples of Jesus Christ. If you'd like to order resources or listen to the broadcast online, visit our website at equip.org. That's equip.org. Or call a resource consultant at 888-7000-274. Of course, you can write to CRI at Post Office Box 8500, Charlotte, North Carolina, zip code 28271. The Bible Answer Man broadcast is supported by listeners like you. We're on the air because life and truth matter. Winston Churchill once declared, "You may have to fight when there is no hope of victory, because it is better to perish than to live as slaves." Churchill sought to awaken those who were reluctant to fight against the advancing Nazi war machine. Today, a spiritual battle is taking place. New atheism advances in the West, and slavery to secularity is imprisoning more and more hearts and minds in the United States. For this reason, CRI's ministry is critical. But we need people willing to stand for truth, along with the financial provisions to accomplish its mission. Stand with Hank Hanegraaff and the Christian Research Institute during the month of June to end the fiscal year in a position of strength. Call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support CRI's life-changing outreaches. 888-7000-CRI or visit equip.org. Equip.org.